Welcome to A Spiro Life for November 1st, 2011. The intention with A Spiro Life is to share with you the latest and most up-to-date insights of the changes taking place on our planet. We invite your feedback and comments as to what could assist you as we move towards this collective awakening. For those of you who wish to contact me, my website is www.aspirolifestyle.ca. On today's show, we are fortunate to have Neil Kramer. Neil is an English writer and philosopher specializing in the field of consciousness, metaphysics, shamanism, and ancient mystical disciplines. Neil's website is www.neilkramer.com. Welcome, Neil Kramer, to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's a pleasure. Okay, I want to jump off here with speaking about, as you and I just were mentioning just before we started recording, about this end of the Mayan calendar that a lot of people have looked at as opposed to the December 21st, 2012 date. We've been looking at this date for the past number of years of October 28th, 2011. And I've gotten some emails from listeners that have said, you know, what is going on? I see that there's a lot of chaos out there, but it doesn't have the sense of oneness that we were kind of anticipating. And for those of us that have been on this spiritual path for quite a number of years, we were feeling pretty optimistic about this date. So I guess my question is, how do we move from your perspective to these higher realms, and what is your sense of what this period of time is all about?
Well, there's so many things embedded in that question. I'll try and unpack them one by one.
Okay.
The first thing in terms of calendars and measurements of time and measurements of cycles of consciousness and cycles of light and dark is that this process has been going on for about 10, 15,000 years on Earth. And men and women have measured these epochs for a long time, and the Mayan calendar is quite a recent iteration of that process, if you want to put it that way. And I think part of the value of it is in understanding that the measurement, as I'm sure yourself and many of your listeners fully conceive of, is not necessarily chronologically of time. It's not a temporal measurement. It's a measurement of consciousness, and it's a measurement of a development of consciousness. And I think what calendar start points and stop points show us is the time when a consciousness shift occurs at the sort of critical mass level. So what a lot of people get confused about is thinking something staggering is going to happen, and there's going to be this phenomenal shift into unitary consciousness and so on. Mm-hmm. And of course, If this date is tomorrow, we shall soon see, won't we? But I think the principle underneath all of this stuff is the thing that is very deceptively simple to overlook. And the principle is this, that the seed of conscious change is actually absolutely dependent on the individual. And so everybody's experience of these shifts as they occur is completely and necessarily dependent on their own perspective and their own outlook in life. And so if there is any sniff of disavowal and disownment of one's own journey and one's own unfoldment, which I think we're going to come to this in a little bit more detail later, then your experience of the shift is going to be sort of directly correlated to that. So in other words, if you are living in your center, in your truth, authentically in power and absolutely with complete purity, then the shift is very obvious. It's very clear, and it's been happening for, I would say, about 8 years, and we're just reaching a peak point now. So it's a little bit to me like it's the summertime, and then on one day in the summer, it's the hottest day. And if you're really involved in your own path and you're really busy and doing stuff, you may not even notice that day come and go, because the actual movement of summer as a season is something that takes place over quite a period. And I think this phenomena and this concern, quite frankly, although people like to wrap it up as optimism, it's a concern in a way as well, that is something going to happen, is something not going to happen? It is going to happen, but you'd have to be extremely highly tuned to even notice it, in my view. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't detract from the profundity of what's occurring, because it is deep, and it is fundamentally changing the way the human story is playing out on this planet. It couldn't be more profound, but it isn't a light switch moment where somebody throws that switch and everything changes in a moment. I don't think it would benefit anybody if it worked like that. So I think we have to look at this through a lens that gives us a broad perspective on it, and say that that shift does happen over a period of time. It's not in a moment. So these epochs, as they come and go, have been tracked way before the Mayans showed up, way before the Toltecs showed up, way before the Druids showed up, way before the Egyptians or the Sumerians. You can go back and back and back and back. And I think it sort of benefits us. It does us well to consider that historical time period and realize that in terms of man's story, that the Mayans are one recent version of that. And they have a very beautiful version of that. And it's very absorbing, and it's perhaps one of the most engaging systems there is, if you want to look at it in that way. However, when you understand that it's new and it's recent and it's happened many times before, rather than, again, sort of disenfranchising one from the adventure of this change of epochs, quite the reverse. It shows us that it happens over and over, and it is regular, and it is something that we can depend upon to keep bringing us forward. So I have a very positive attitude about it, and doing what I do, I mean, nearly every day I get emails about some sort of end date or beginning date or shift or grid takedown or silence or solar flare or ascension or something. And if I put a calendar on the wall and put a little red dot on every day where something magnificent was going to happen, it would be every single day, quite frankly. it would be every day, and I would be wondering whether it would be a good day to go to the supermarket or not, you know, and I'd be thinking, shall I do this today, or shall I buy 300 cans of beans today and some candles, you know. It's like, it's all the time, it's happening all the time. And I think even in that humorous little sort of metaphor, there is something there that says, well, it actually is happening every day. Something fundamental is happening every day. But people want to see that represented in a pivotal focal event. So they want to see something. They want to see the clouds open, or they want to see a physical shift, or they want to see a molecular restructuring or something like that. And I think those things do happen all the time, every day. It depends who you are and where you live as to your ability to perceive that and become close to the experience of that. If you don't truly walk the spiritual path, and in my experience, I have to say most people do not, then you're always kind of on the edge of waiting for something to come in and transport you. And it's that forgetfulness that the stargate to this kind of wonderment is actually inside us. It's nowhere else. It's inside the individual. You know, you, yourself, that is where it is. That's where reality is projected from. And so your experience with reality depends on the purity of your perception and the purity of your being and the authenticity of your day-to-day conduct. It's not secret knowledge. It's not some sacred stuff buried somewhere that somebody digs up and whispers the secret in your ear. It's actually your own life that configures you for this this shift. And I think that's the problem that a lot of people encounter, including myself. It affects everybody. That we have to understand that it is our very lives themselves that are the literal depiction of our spiritual attainment. And so if things are not good in your life, they're that way for a reason. And you can't wish for them to be swept away by some calendar change. It doesn't work like that, because how would that possibly benefit one's growth? You know, we have to go through each stage and each challenge and each unfoldment one by one, and that's a truly holy gift, a sacred gift. To have that rug pulled from under our feet, although it might look very convenient to see 101 little problems that we all have in our lives washed away, it actually doesn't help us whatsoever. So why would that occur? I just think that people need to contemplate that. Many people do, but even old walkers on the path who've been walking the spiritual path all their lives, 40, 50 years, 1,000 years, it doesn't matter. You can still do good work and you can still live with virtue and miss the fundamentals. So sometimes it takes a 22-year-old to come along and say something of profound wisdom to pierce your own self-deception. So it's a thing of humbleness as well, this, to actually look upon yourself rather than look to the outside.
Why, going back to one of the things you said, why, if we are spirits having a human experience, does it seem that there are so many people still asleep to, you know, the energies that are around them, metaphysical changes, all of those things? I mean, there seems like there's this big slumber. I guess when I was contemplating this years ago, back in the late 90s, looking forward, and again, there's a lesson in that for me as well, but looking forward, you know, it was more about people waking up to their spiritual selves that I was kind of anticipating. And on one level, it's happened. I mean, you certainly see more metaphysical and philosophical material out there. But, you know, and there's been so many paradigm shifts within society, but there still seems to be this reluctance to actually look at people's shadow or stuff or whatever you want to call it. So why do you think that is?
People sleep to protect themselves. When people fear evolution, like the caterpillar would fear its evolution and its dissolution before it turned into a butterfly, so the human mind fears its own evolution. That's the central problem. And it's rather an ironic one, of course, because that's the thing that we're trying to bring about. So the closer you bring people to that evolution, the scarier it gets, quite frankly. And you have to say, again, you have to stand back and tell the truth. And you have to speak the truth to yourself. You have to see the truth in the lives of those around you. And the truth is that people don't really want spiritual growth. They don't really want enlightenment, because they are aware at a deep level that with that inner change comes an inevitable transformation of the outside as well. Mm-hmm. And if somebody spent 20 or 30 or 50 or 70 years building a third density physical life with great investment in that life, then what will it mean to have that swept away? Because when you begin spiritual work, it, of course, as you appreciate, it begins first and foremost with yourself, and that is the lens through which the whole thing occurs. So to be spiritual is to constantly work on yourself as an open system, as a work in progress, as an art project, as a canvas that's perpetually changing. And what it means is that you're always examining your very foundations, really. So somebody like yourself, it's deceptively easy to forget how early on in that journey, what a paradigm-cracking, scary thing it is to go to your very foundations, lay as they are beneath the surface that we don't usually look at, let alone become aware of, to go to those foundations and begin to rebuild them. Because until you do that with awareness, everything you build on those foundations is on shaky ground. And no matter how magnificent the towers and turrets and spires that we build, if that foundation isn't right, then it's all for nothing, really. And I think that's the chief problem here, that we have all these politicians and celebrities and business people and technologists and scientists and goodness knows what, and artists and musicians even. It's not all the kind of suit and tie people. and they've built these amazing structures in the life, seem very culturally rich and very alluring, but we know that beneath the surface those foundations have crumbled, really, and it's only just going to take a slight gust of wind to blow the whole thing over. And so at a broader level, you can see that there's some truth in that. But at a personal level, if we ever wonder why some of our friends and family aren't quite as interested in this stuff as we are, it's because they're not prepared to go back to the foundations. It seems like too much work, to be quite honest. So the deal, if you like, the bargain of saying, well, dig beneath your own psychological surface, go to the foundations, rebuild them. You may have to sweep away a few of the structures you've built, and your whole life will transform. You know, if you approach somebody with that deal, they're going to sort of raise their eyebrows, scratch the chin, and probably think, well, that sounds very nice, but I think instead I'll just read a spiritual book, and that's okay. That's enough for me right now. So it's really a radical path, being a spiritual person. Not only do you place yourself in a minority on this planet, but it's also, in a third density state, a thankless job. There's not actually much that comes with it. And of course, the reward, if you want to think of it in that way, not that this is a marketplace, but you can't help but think of, in terms of how it benefits us, the reward is that we get higher dimensional or higher density endeavor and higher density and higher dimensional experience. So we begin, our perceptions deepen. We see more, we become more connected, synchronicities increase. And to put it bluntly, life re-magics itself, and we actually start to live in the true world, not the fake construct world. And so once you glimpse that, and once you actually put 2 feet on the path, which again, not many people do, lots of people put 1 foot on the path, but to actually put your whole commitment into it and put 2 feet on that path, once you do that, can never go back, because you wouldn't want to. You will never turn back from that, because it's the true path, and it's the path of human beings. It's nothing unusual as such, but a certain percentage of the people on this planet have failed to be conditioned by the what I call the construct, which is like the artificial reality, and any sort of conspiratorial groups who might want to keep people dumb and entertained and sedated. You know, that doesn't work with everybody. So for me, that never quite worked. Although I was immersed in popular culture like everyone else as a child and a young man, it never really penetrated, it never really got in. And so my unfoldment was quite natural. It seemed perfectly okay to do. And it came quite easily in a way. Not that the path is easy, but the initial process for me was all right. I was very fortunate in that respect. What's weird is when you look around and you realize that nobody else is doing it, nobody. And you have to begin to change your life if you'd like to have proximity to other people who are engaged with their unfoldment. At first, when you wake up yourself, there's no one else doing it. It's pretty universal experience that the people around you are not doing it. So it's only with time, and as you go to events and workshops and conferences and speak to people and stuff, you become aware that there are a lot of other people doing this. And the beautiful thing about this technology we have, which is really just a surrogate for the true psychic core technology, but we've forgotten how to use that for the moment. Mm-hmm. The internet reminds us of the principle of that, and it allows us to connect with each other as we're doing now and as we all do in our personal lives as well. And I think that that gives us a sense that it isn't necessarily the case that the point of a shift is to wake everybody up. I have never felt that, and I still do not feel that. I think there's a certain critical mass of people who carry the frequency, who hold the space for consciousness to evolve properly. And I think that that is very closely bound to nature, if you like, to the planet itself. And it's not necessary for everybody to wake up in some ways. And quite frankly, and this is quite controversial, but not everybody on Earth is from the same place. So we didn't all start here. We didn't all, and for the newcomers, we didn't all come from the same places. So the endeavor here and the goal here is different for different groups of people. So I think it's, you could consider the Earth like America, in that if you go back only a few hundred years, nobody came from here except, we could say, perhaps the Native American peoples. But everybody else, they came from Denmark, or they came from Ireland, or they came from England, or they came from wherever. And they came from Asia and the Africas and so on. And so it is with the Earth. The population, 7 billion of them, they didn't all come from here, in my view. And the more you look at it, the more self-evident that is. And so not everybody's trajectory is the same. So to say, let's have unitary consciousness, let's wake up ready for the calendar day, is very self-indulgent, really, because everybody's adventure is rather unique. And if your adventure is to grow, then grow. But nobody's going to come in and give you that, because that disenfranchises you from your own growth. So if you look at it in that way, you can't really lose. And if something phenomenally wonderful happens, fantastic. And if it doesn't, fantastic, because the adventure is pretty engrossing anyway, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, what you're saying makes complete sense to me. I mean, I think that we all come from different places in this universe with different perspectives and so on and so forth. So when we come here, you know, we're all having different experiences. I mean, and they're as unique as the amount of people on this planet. But when we see, for example, systems disintegrating or under great upheaval, and people really tied into that third dimensional reality, what do you suppose that's going to do for humanity?
Well, one of the marvelous things about this place that we find ourselves in is that it has a kind of emergency threshold reboot system, I like to call it. And every now and again, the whole place kind of like shifts, and it does it on an energy level. And it's the most fundamental level. The actual structure itself shifts. And a scientist would say, perhaps at the, you know, particular, at the molecular level. And a spiritual person would say, you know, the vibrations change, frequencies change. And a cultural person would say, well, it's the vibe has changed, or the zeitgeist has changed. But no matter which angle you look at it from, we can kind of feel that something is changing at the moment. Something is happening, and it's a little bit uncomfortable, because we've all been really brought up with the idea that 1950s Britain and 1950s America is an idyllic kind of way of life, where everything is lovely and plentiful and abundant, and the government loves you and looks after you, and you can leave your front door open and all your friends and family are all very happy, and everyone gets along with each other and bakes pies and drives shiny cars around.
Mm-hmm.
And that is still driving most people's dreams today. Of course, the particulars of that have changed. It's now a different kind of house, a different kind of car, and different kinds of clothes. But people really are still just interested in having nice things, quite frankly. And that is, like, very poor, quite frankly. Very poor indeed. And it's a little bit like everybody's been in the first few classes of college, and they keep failing to graduate, they keep failing to pass their exams to get to the next level of education. And what the Earth does, it seems to me anyway, having studied this and looked at it over the last perceptible 10,000 years and speculatively the last 25,000 years, is that every now and again it kind of reboots itself. And that means that all those investments in what is essentially illusory, of course, which are just thought forms, mind projections, all those thought form investments are disintegrated, basically. And there's a very close relationship with that reboot process and the sun. And at a physical level, you could say, well, yes, we can clearly see how huge coronal mass ejection could come and, you know, be a bit of a game changer, change the way that things work on Earth on a physical level. But if you look at it at a slightly different perspective and say, well, let's imagine for a minute that the sun is a living entity in exactly the same way as the Earth is. And let's say that what we have been taught to believe is a big fireball kind of nuclear power station engine thing, big yellow sphere, is actually not. It's not that at all. It's actually an entity. It's a living entity. And that light is consciousness. Then as it changes its consciousness and as it changes its relationship with the Earth and as it fires what we perceive as, you know, this electromagnetic radiation, let's imagine that that isn't that, but it's actually something more primal in a way. It's actually consciousness. The whole ecosystem of this, of our solar system, is fundamentally changing. All the planets are changing. Physically, there's a lot of evidence for that in terms of how they're changing the structures and heating up and so on and so forth. But at a metaphysical level, and at, as I say, a more core level, the structure itself is changing. And if you can really get still, and how, whoever you are and whatever practice you have for that, if you can just kind of switch down the static of the mind, you can actually detect that the physical world is becoming less dense. Mm-hmm. Its glue is starting to break down. And that is an absolutely wonderful thing in my view, and it's a very, very perfectly organic, natural development. And of course, if you said that in the wrong company, in mainstream downtown LA or New York or Portland, where I am, mm-hmm. people are going to think you're bonkers. And if you say that loud enough, somebody is going to come and put you in a little room and lock the door. So mm-hmm. you have to be careful about how you talk about this. So very often in interviews and conversations I have, you talk about these symptoms and the effects of that in terms of people are beginning to disbelieve the political paradigm anymore. Even the old-timers who have always voted Democrat or Republican have started to think, hang on a second, this is all hogwash, isn't it? This isn't This isn't really doing anything. And even you know, the most pristine, wonderful human being who might find themselves in D.C. in the corridors of power isn't really going to make any difference. It doesn't work like that. And of course, the big question is, well, if we don't have that political apparatus, what the hell do we have? You know, what's the alternative? Is it just little people living in eco-villages and governing themselves? Is it chaos? Is it wonderful? Is it good? Is it bad? And again, people are looking at, well, what that would look like is a result of the state of consciousness. And so you have to go to the state of consciousness to imagine how that would be. And at the moment, the state of consciousness in all major world population centers is extremely low. Is it extremely low vibration? Let's just put it as diplomatically as we can without judging there. It's a very low vibration, and I think nobody could deny that, really. Even those who admit that would have to look around and say, well, I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. And so what the Earth does is it says, well, that's okay, but now everyone operating on that vibratory level is basically going to be brought to the next phase of the game, and that looks like you're being kind of energetically recycled, basically. And if you look at it from a purely physical level, it is like a cataclysm or an apocalypse or some sort of rapture, depending on who you are and what your way of perceiving the world is. It looks like some tremendous, huge, profound drama. And it is. If you're a little human being, if you're a little leaf on the tree and all you've ever known is summer and then autumn comes and you find your colors are changing and then you fall off the bloody tree and land on the ground and then get blown around by the wind, that is quite a dramatic thing if you've never seen a seasonal change before.
That's right.
But if you step back from that and say, well, if if I get out of my third density egoic projection for a minute, as wonderful and beautiful and natural as that is, but I am a multidimensional being, so let's go to a different level. And from that level, you can see more of the map of your own life, and you can say, okay, there is an autumn, there is a fall, but there is also a winter, which looks even weirder. But then there's a spring, and then there's a summer, and that cycle repeats. And what these calendar systems do is map that at the local level and at the macro level, if you like. And so there are little synchronous shifts that occur very closely related with consciousness. And there are little ones, and there are medium-sized ones, and there are big ones. And it seems to me that we're on the edge of a big one at the moment, which is what I think of in my own philosophy, if you like, as a seasonal change. Now, my view on this is that the seasonal change that we're going to experience is going from winter into spring, if you want to use that metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lived in winter for so long that even though spring seems like quite a nice prospect to the rational mind, it's still scary because everything that we'd associated with that previous season and all the systems that we've built up to deal with it and engineer it and manufacture it and perpetuate it, all those things will be obsolete. They won't ever be needed again. So for those people who have completely and totally lost themselves in the narrative of winter time, they're going to struggle because that's going away now. Something completely different is coming in. And as a spiritual person, one has a little bit of an advantage over those people, not a big one, just a little one, in that psychologically we're more prepared for that. So we'll still feel the same discomfort from time to time and still occasionally feel that uncertainty as a bit of a grip in your chest or your stomach. And yet psychologically, because of the work we've been doing and the study in our spiritual path, we're more flexible. We're not as invested in the third density state and in the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of us, in fact, is quite excited to move away from that. But as long as we're doing that with the right virtue, to use that rather old-fashioned word, then that's okay, because me too, I'll be very happy to wave goodbye to conscious winter time and jump into the spring. You know, it'll be a wonderful thing to see those first new shoots and flowers opening up. How wonderful to see the green return after all the grayness and darkness. But that's because I've done decades of hard work on myself, mm-hmm. to decondition myself, to purify my consciousness, to lower my egoic mind, to increase my humble attitude in life, and all those things that we understand about spirituality. And if you haven't done that, the prospect of a seasonal change is just very, very odd and very scary. And it's really just a macro version of the seasonal change that happens in somebody's personal life when they begin their awakening. So to get right back to your sort of original question, people don't want to wake up because they're afraid of the unknown. And people are very cautious about end dates and apocalypses, which is just, I'm sure many people have figured out when you look at the etymology of these words, although it can tell you what the word means, of course, and where it came from and its history, it also can give you a clue about the truth of a phrase. So an apocalypse really is just the lifting of the veil at the end of the age. And that seems to me to be rather a wonderful thing. So
mm-hmm.
if somebody ever is like, do you think the apocalypse is coming? I'm like, well, I sure hope so. I really hope it is, you know.
Whatever word you want to, however you want to describe it.
Yeah.
Well, I love your analogy of the seasons because, of course, doing astrology and numerology, everything is cyclical. So, you know, my mind works like that in this giant spiral. So I'm completely connecting with what you're saying. And I would also like your perspective on, I mean, I gravitate towards the feeling that there's seven dimensions. You know, other people think there's 12 and 13 and goodness knows how many. But regardless of how many people perceive there are, what is your outlook or your sense of what the dimensions look like and what a dimensional shift actually would look like?
We need about 5 hours for that, to be honest. Let me try and distill
that to
5. You've
got 20 minutes.
Oh, I've got 20 minutes. Oh, well, there we are then. Easy. Absolutely easy, yeah. 20 minutes for such a vast question. Well, you know, again, we can stick a flag in the ground and say there's 3, or there's 4, or there's 7, or there's 25, or there's 102. And you can build quite a nice argument for any number that you can think of, really, as to how many there are. And scientists like to say there's 10 or 11 or 26, usually, based on current ideas of string and superstring theory and whatnot. And although that seems very credible to a lot of people because it's scientists doing it, it's just as laughable as some of the more crackpot mystics that used to have a go at this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the point is, you have to go to credible mystics and credible scientists, in my view. And just like everywhere else in life, that means you have to sift through a lot of nonsense to get there. And so my view is to go to the earliest sources we've got in some way. Not that early means true, because just because it's written in a cuneiform in a stone tablet doesn't mean anything. It could still be absolute nonsense, just like it's written in the Washington Post today. You know, it doesn't mean that it's anything special. The advantage of going to the old stuff, though, is you can track its evolution and see how kind of pure it is, in a way, because as something goes through the eons, through the millennia, true stuff tends to stay kind of the same, in a way. It transforms its appearance a little bit, and it becomes a little more refined, shall we say, but the core of it stays the same. And I have found that, I mean, Buddhism really is, as Alan Watts used to say, is Hinduism stripped down for export. So you can understand the principles of Hinduism by studying for a few years inside out back to front Buddhism. But inevitably, the keen Buddhist student will be drawn back to the roots of that, which is Hinduism. And so looking at the way they describe things in terms of heavens, planes, and spheres and stuff, you can look at how that's described by them. And I think that's important to do. We've not got time to go into it here, but that's a useful way of looking at it. My understanding has been shaped to some extent by European esoteric schools, all different kinds of systems of occultism and magic and you know, Victorian mysticism and medieval mysticism, and that to me is a very beautiful way of organizing information about the earth and understanding what we can see before us. And then in a little later started looking at the popular end of quantum physics, because quite frankly that's the only part I can understand. As soon as it's real quantum physics, my eyes just glaze over, really, because I've not been trained to you know, engage with the information at that level. But fortunately, I've known just a short time ago, became very friendly with a physicist, and so I always just like get the you know, the potted history and the bullet points, the cliff notes or whatever from him. That's been very useful. But I would say, to give you a sort of fair answer, I say there are 7 densities, okay? When I say density, what I'm meaning by that is a level of energy that is organized in a particular kind of way. And if you say density to a scientist, they're going to kind of get all worked up, because they think that they know what density is, yeah? Because they deal with it as classically as mass per volume. But there are many types of density. There's like linear density, particle density, Planck density, charge density, tensor density, lots of different kinds. When I'm talking about density, I'm talking about it as an organizational layer of information, a density of vibration, we might say. And that, for me, nicely places the focus on consciousness rather than any sort of spatial dimension. So if you say dimension, again, people think spatially like that. And that can be confusing because I think that, for example, the fourth dimension is overlaid on us here. The fifth dimension is overlaid on top of that here. So if you went to a seventh dimensional being who would be so wonderful and celestial compared to us, they are here, right now. And so to speak spatially of that can be a bit confusing. So I have started to think of it in terms of densities, which again is an old thing. A few thousand years ago they were saying this. People pick it up now and again. Various channels material will talk in these terms, which I think is good. It's nice to get different perspectives on it. And you can think of everything in that sense as a configuration of energy. And to me, it makes sense to say that we exist in the third density state. And so a shift, of course, is a movement to the fourth density, which to me is characterized by non-physical energetic manifestation. So there's no need for the anchor of physical form. And entities in that space can move very freely and can evolve and transmute their form in a much more unrestricted manner than we experience here. And that fourth density state is also, as it happens in my understanding of this, is the last density where any sort of negative conduct is possible. And so it's the final testing ground to get your consciousness ready to move to the next point in this normal, organic human ascendancy. Nothing remarkable this. It's normal. It's what everybody does. It's just that we've got sidetracked over the last 25,000 years, in my view. And I think that that is coming upon us, and a clever way that that happens, and it's funny, really. It really is funny. It's that the rug of the third density gets pulled from under your feet. So if you haven't got any sort of way of balancing yourself, then you're just going to fall flat on your ass and you're going to end up in a funny situation. And so it's not a wise thing. And I think everybody knows this, hand on heart, even the materialists and the hedonists of the world. It's not a very prudent maneuver to put all your consciousness into the nice things of the third density, because that's going away. That is going away. Not from the whole universe, but just from this part of the galaxy as we get closer to the core. Physical density is less and less, and physical form is less appropriate in a way. And so as we increase our consciousness and deepen it, the effect is that we're more able to maneuver with that free from a physical form. In the same way that Victorian occultists would talk about astral projection, that is a fourth dimensional day-to-day living experience that is around the corner, in my view. And so you can practice with that now, and you can see some of the challenges involved with that, about navigation and about communication and about sustenance and about direction and virtue and so on. And it seems that just in the same way that there's this threshold of safety that means that you have to get your conduct sorted out before you can move to a fifth density state, so you can't go there as a baddie, to put it in simple terms. You have to be morally, what we would call morally capable in a very natural sense, in that you have just a bulletproof fine conduct and integrity. And similarly, if you shift down, people who haven't mastered morals and ethics and simple principles of proper human conduct are not able to transition to a fourth density state. So there is a sacredness and a respect in everybody's journey here. So even though it may look very ugly to us to see somebody working through such apparently low lessons in life, we're all at different stages. You don't just do this over a 90-year lifespan. You do it over thousands of years on Earth. So when you see the guy down the street who's beating someone up, He may just be a newcomer, and he's learning very primal lessons about how to conduct himself. And guess what? Next time round, it'll be him who's beaten up, so you get to see it from both perspectives. And then the next time round, there won't be any beating up because he's experienced it. He's been the beater and the beatee, so he's not going to be doing that again. And so we have to acknowledge that being a little more enlightened than others, a little more, we see a breadth of experience that can look very confusing when we look at the baseness of some of our fellow men and women, and yet that is a sacred thing that they're going through, and it would be wrong of us to pull that away from them and to ask them in some way to disown their own growth. Why would we do that? If they don't go through that, they'll never know. And so, in short, I would say that everybody goes through the shifts of consciousness levels, of densities. Everybody goes through that, and you cannot not go through that. But everyone has their own velocity for this stuff, their own speed of progress. And so if you make it your business to live as a sage, to use the old Chinese language, and become a wise person and live a wise way of life, then your velocity is going to increase. You're going to move really quickly. And as I'm sure you and your listeners can smile when I say this, that you leave a lot of people behind when you do that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that used to bring you satisfaction and pleasure and solace don't anymore. So you, with that speed also comes some challenges and some responsibilities, but also great gifts and great distances covered. And the places you can go to with that velocity really open up. So I wouldn't change it for the world, but that transformation is something that one has to get used to as you move through your conscious evolution. You can't just have somebody come and say, here, let me give you a paradigm-shifting, fourth-dimensional awakening. There you go. There it is. Because they'd just explode. You know, there'd be no groundwork, no tools, no equipment, no awareness. Mm-hmm. It's not good to do that. So to expect a savior to come and do that, or a redeemer if you're a religious person, or the craft from the Pleiades to come and just make it all good and make it all better, that's not going to happen. And if it does, it's fake, but that wouldn't really happen, because any advanced or intelligent life forms who do look upon us and observe us for a long time, they want us to grow. They want us to grow naturally, just as the botanist would look at plants. He's not going to mess about with them. He wants to see how they grow. And he knows that their best evolution is to grow in the most organic, pure way possible. And so it is with human consciousness.
As we've said, we are the ones we've been waiting for in many regards. So I'm, you know, I wholeheartedly am on board with what you're saying. I mean, and really, although we mentioned the date of October 28th, I mean, logically, we've known, you know, it's a date like New Year's Eve 1999, when we were anticipating that the year 2000 something was going to happen. You're right, there's been these cycles in time all the way along. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how we are going to continue to evolve. And in numerology and astrology, you know, it points to we're different souls at different levels having different experiences, not good or bad, just at different places. And you know, some are older than others, and some have just come here for the first time, and we all have different experiences we're going through and operating with different levels of consciousness. And the other thing that I want to point out about is that Mercury is going retrograde in November again, and my sense with Mercury retrograde, because I often have people say to me, why the heck, what is the purpose of Mercury retrograde? All it does is muck up my computers or my telephones, I lose things, and so on and so forth. But exactly what you're saying, what I see is it's a tool to remind us of we're meant to use our mental, physical, and emotional capabilities to, you know, to not rely on this stuff so much, because we do become...
It does. Yes, it does. It really does. I'm so glad you said that. It's that negativity is a learning engine. Mm-hmm. And without it, we all kind of just dance around under the trees, which is very nice, but sometimes polarity is necessary, and in the third density state, it's absolutely necessary, and it keeps us bouncing around from positive to negative charge and doing stuff about it. And the negativity is absolutely our projection and absolutely our fault and our joy and our responsibility. And so we must never get too wrapped up in that. It's just an engine of creation, and it's nothing to worry about. It's only a worry for your ego, who is in love with you but is a survivalist crackpot as well and is worried that once the form dissolves that everything is game over. You have to quietly say to the ego, look, buddy, I know you're trying to do your best. I know you love me and care about me, but it's okay. We are infinite, and just have to take my word for that. And if you can have that allegorical little exchange at that level, you start to worry less about what changes come. And yet it would be odd to see massive waves and, you know, alien landings and crustal shifts and all the amazing, freaky, bizarre things that could come upon us. And yet, so what? So what if they do? You know, that's how it has to be. That's what occurs. It's not what happens. It's how you deal with it. It's not what you do even. It's the way that you do it. Mm-hmm. It's your attitude and your conduct and your growth and your compassion. Those are the things that measure our progress, not the events.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wonderful place to end. And see, you did get it done in 20 minutes. Thank you for this powerful talk today on consciousness. I really appreciate you taking the time with us today, Neil. And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure to speak with you. Yes, if anybody would like to find out more about my work, then they can simply go to neilkramer.com. So that's NEILKRAMER, neilkramer.com. And there are various essays and interviews and videos and materials and things on there that people can get their teeth into, should they so wish.
And do you want to tell us just a little bit about your book? I know it's not out now, but it's coming out in the spring. Can you give us a little insight on that?
Yes, my book is coming out in the spring, and it's my first sort of major book in this area. I have other things from previous existences, but this particular spiritual philosophy, this empowerment that we're talking about, some of the themes we've talked about today, the book is really a synthesis of my endeavor to bring clarity and transformation to people and have it be an adventure, not have it be something painful, not have it be something scary, but to understand that our life itself is the instrument of our own ascendance. And once you kind of figure that out, you can literally redesign it, you can change it, you can transform it, and you can re-magic it. And so the book is really about that, and it's a very approachable book. It's got a lot of layers to it, so old-timers will enjoy some new stuff, and newcomers alike will be able to safely pick it up without getting fingers singed.
Excellent. So we can give it to those people in our lives that are just verging on this new path.
Yeah, that's what I've tried to do, make it multi-layered. Like, my favorite books have been like that, so this is my attempt to try and create something of the same tone.
Great. Well, thank you so much again, Neil, for joining us. And for all those listeners, you know how to get in touch with me, but my email again is Cyrilla, C-Y-R-I-L-L-A, at Aspiro, A-S-P-I-R-O, lifestyle.ca. And until next time, keep your energy flowing. Namaste.